Well, now to this ongoing national conversation, another one, about how to fund the transport infrastructure that we need now and into the future. Just as Karen was saying, if we sort of allegedly get anxious about government's borrowing, and that's a debate in itself. But one idea gaining momentum is value capture, where the likely impact on property values and property-related tax revenues as a result of better transport links is tapped into and explicitly stated. It's a way of getting more private money into the mix, taking the full burden for infrastructure away from governments. And a House of Representatives inquiry into the idea has this week heard that value capture can and should be applied to construct more urban and even high-speed rail projects around the country. New South Wales Federal MP John Alexander is the chairman of the House of Representatives Standing Committee on Infrastructure, Transport and Cities, and he joined us yesterday just en route from Canberra to Sydney. Hello.
How are you?
Good, thank you. Talk us through, if you would, this idea of value capture. How new an idea is it?
Not very new at all. Abraham Lincoln used it to fund the railway from the east coast to the west coast of the United States. And it worked very, very well, and it's been used in various forms ever since, but it seems to have missed our shores. Largely, although the Harbour Bridge was partially funded with value capture.
Right. Is it another form of tax, in a sense? Is that what it amounts to? It's a form of government getting money?
Yes, it is, but it's an equitable way of funding infrastructure, because it's not always the user of the infrastructure that gets the benefit. In this case, often it's the people who just through good luck happen to own land where infrastructure is then placed that increases that land value enormously. And it's unfair and inequitable that that person's fellow taxpayer pays the cost of the infrastructure and a few lucky homeowners walk away without paying any tax with enormous profits. Like the recent 60 Minutes story about the Cherrybrook train station, where one lucky homeowner who'd paid about $400,000 for the home walked away with some $8 million. That's 16 times the value of the home.
Mm.
That is not fair. It's not equitable.
And in terms of just thinking where it's applied even, you know, more recently than the Harbour Bridge or Abraham Lincoln, you know, are places like Japan, which, because we did a story recently about Japan sort of really championing its very fast train model around Southeast Asia, are they using it too?
Absolutely. And they confronted similar problems to what we confront here in this country now. And Tokyo was the most expensive city in the world at the time. And they needed a way of strategically decentralizing. And I think what we need to focus on in this country is the purpose of high-speed rail is to strategically decentralize, to rebalance this extraordinary imbalance of settlement that we've had through not having any planning, where we've got two enormous cities, an incredibly busy air route, the third or fourth busiest air route in the world between Sydney and Melbourne. And the value of the land between those two cities is very low. Sydney's the second most expensive real estate in the world, Melbourne the fourth most expensive. With connectivity with places like Shepparton, the Southern Highlands and Goulburn, those regions will then be competing with Sydney and Melbourne prices. And so the uplift will be phenomenal. We have a perfect storm, perfect precondition for value capture to be applied to really fund the entirety of high-speed rail.
The first witness to the inquiry was the Perth-based Professor of Sustainability, Peter Newman, who's been researching the potential for value capture in Australia. Now, he is particularly excited about the use of private investment to fund urban rail networks. Do you see that as a key yield?
I think it's a very important component that Peter brought to this debate in giving his evidence. And his idea really was a privatisation of value capture when developers have land and through the installation of infrastructure, that land can have such enormous uplift that it can fund the vital infrastructure. I think one of the problems we've had as a country is we haven't had master planning, and that might deny us that opportunity of master planning. So that, I think, should be part of a hybrid model that combines with governments to design fully infrastructure for regions and cities, and that combination can get us over the line.
And as I understand it, it's called the entrepreneur rail model. In it, the private sector suggests the most important opportunities for viable redevelopment, unlike the government planning the rail system. Is this what you see could come quite realistically?
Absolutely. In fact, there are groups who have assembled who are looking at doing this for high-speed rail.
So, because I can remember so vividly, you know, because I'm very interested in this, where the government did do some years back this very serious audit and decided it couldn't be done. It just wasn't, the money just wasn't there. Now, is this conceivably, could it change things?
Well, that report commissioned by the Labor government totally ignored the opportunity of value capture, and they were looking at returns solely from the ticket price. And yes, if you just want to look at it as operating business, high-speed rail, or no other rail for that matter, makes any sense. And if we're going to have master planning for settlement and for the re-urbanisation, urban densification of our cities, the retrofitting of infrastructure, you've got to have a master funding mechanism. Mm. And I see that as being a federally designed and implemented value capture that would include capital gains taxes, that would in turn ask the states to contribute their stamp duties, and that these amounts would be quarantined and hypothecated towards the cost of the infrastructure. So the state would actually come to the federal government, say, we have this project, we want to build this, we are willing to engage with the local councils to zone and be proactive with planning approvals to ensure the maximum uplift of land, that there will be a tax or a levy or value capture applied, even if it is your private home. Because at what time does your private home become an investment? When there's infrastructure that's come in, when there's rezoning that's happened, and when you're selling it to a developer for eight times the value of it, I think that's an investment you should pay a tax on.
Yes, I know that Peter Newman's group at Curtin University cites the new rail line in Perth in some pretty convincing evidence, I must say, suggesting that new rail line raised land values in station precincts by 42% in 5 years. So, it, you know, the segue for me is, who makes that judgment about who is liable to pay and does the estimate of their liability?
Well, I think that's the process that we're on, to find the best, most appropriate form of value capture for Australia and for each project. And sometimes these things will need to be tailor-made for a particular project to accommodate those who are the stakeholders, the landowners, the councils, the states, the developers, and our existing tax systems for that matter.
So, Mr. Alexander, where do you head next? You've heard from a wide range, I see, of groups and individuals, local city governments, land use, sustainability groups, engineering groups. Where are you heading next?
Well, we're continuing the hearings through until late May, early June. We have a Korean group that will be coming to give evidence, who are interested in developing high-speed rail using their own value capture method. We have an American and Japanese group who have formed to do the same. So we're very interested in looking at those two groups. The Chinese group is coming forward with the same experience and technology of using high-speed rail to effect uplift in property values to create cities. And they see Australia as an ideal destination to use these technologies and this experience. So it will be interesting when all that evidence is in. I think it will provide a very, very powerful argument to many who thought that high-speed rail, and I've experienced it for 6 years now, you mentioned high-speed rail and people's eyes turn and roll, but when you look at it through the eyes of value capture as a real way of nation building, the real purpose behind high-speed rail, not to move people from Sydney to Melbourne, but to grow our regional areas and to make them hubs that give, you know, wide-ranging benefits to people in regional areas and surrounding those hubs, then it really is a worthwhile project.
Well, very interesting. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Geraldine. Lovely talking to you.
And that's John Alexander, the Federal MP, Chairman of the House of Reps Standing Committee on Infrastructure, Transport and Cities. And you can find a link to the inquiry into capturing the value of transport infrastructure on the Saturday Extra webpage. Well, listening to that interview with great interest is John Colvin. The respected former CEO who's just stood down in January of the Australian Institute of Company Directors, who's had a sort of magnificent obsession, I think you could call it, with the very fast train for years now. John, welcome back to Saturday Extra.
Thank you, Geraldine. Lovely to be with you.
Your response, firstly, to that interview, please.
Very positive. I think one of the big issues is value capture. And I think one of the things that we can do well as Australians is think clearly and really deeply about how we do that. The sort of things John was saying, I think, are vital. And for the very fast train, I think this is probably one of the game changers that we need to really look at in some detail.
Does it genuinely, I mean, it almost sounds like a magic pudding, you know, because it's a whole new way of thinking in Australia, certainly. In your experience of CBD discussions, how is it viewed by the private sector?
Look, I think the biggest issue when I was first, when in my previous life as a partner in a law firm, used to have discussions with the clients and business community. The biggest issue is they got burnt before, I think, when the Howard proposal was put to them about the high-speed trains.
Mm.
So a lot of people spent a lot of money working up that project, and then it was canned. And so they're very...
They're leery, are they?
Yeah, they're wary, and in the sense of what really needs to be happening is the government is saying, we're going to do this. This needs the President Kennedy, you know, man on the moon type speech. We're going to do this. So now let's put all our energies into working out how we're going to do it. And I'm an incredible optimist when it comes to when that decision's happened. We've got some of the best bankers, lawyers, planners, architects, people who can, look at public policy. So if we put them all together and we say, look, we're going to do this, what's the best way of doing it? All these good ideas in value capture are just part of the proposal. Then it's, how you're going to do it, what sort of trains, et cetera. But ironically, the technical aspects of this big project, enormous project, aren't all that difficult because you can just buy the train set.
Well, that's right. And, I mean, the essence of what I think he was saying and what I've been reading is that under this model, the private sector tends to lead the way. See, you're still talking about, I think, government almost doing the coordination, even if they're not putting the money in. I suppose that's really what I'm asking. Can you see a new model emerging?
I can see a new model emerging, and it's a bit more pragmatic. So what do we really need? We really need the people who are going to build it to come along and say, well, as far as we're concerned, that value capture is not particularly important to us. It might be important to local governments, et cetera, but if you want us to build it, then this is what we would like to see. We'd like to see, for example, the land around that new station. We'd like to be able to develop that. And if we do that, then we will, if you like, put that as part of our feedback or our payment for the scheme. For the rail, and then the government starts getting some real parameters around, okay, so what are the value captures from the people who are going to do it, and how does that fit in with our major planning and the sort of things John Alexander's talking about?
Yes.
We seem to be sitting on the fence saying, oh, this is a fabulous idea, we know we have to do it. If you look at the advisory report by in 2013, that goes through just quickly all the details about, population between Sydney and Melbourne, the fastest, one of the biggest and growing air routes in the world. It's not the amount of people who travel, not necessarily the amount of people.
Well,
and then you've got the air, the problems with airports, et cetera, et cetera.
I just noticed Anthony Albanese, we've just got to go to the news very shortly, reintroduced a private members' bill in Parliament late last year to establish a high-speed rail planning authority, because he became so obsessed when he was minister, that would start developing plans for the route and acquire the land needed. Now, I'm not even going to give you a chance to reply to that, because we're about to hit the news.
Yeah. So we need that planning desperately.
We're just teasing people to start thinking about this in different ways. Thanks indeed, John Colvin.
Thank you, Geraldine.
John Colvin, the former head of the Australian Institute of Company Directors. So let us know what you think about this. Could be a whole new discussion. Coming up, back after news at 8 o'clock.